So today we are joined by a comrade of mine to have a bit of a discussion about the upcoming conference with the Australian Nuclear Free Alliance. Can you just introduce yourself for the listeners?
My name's Manju, and I guess I'm talking to Kieran today because I'm one of the organisers of ANT for this year. It's my first year organising it and my second year attending, doing anti-nuclear organising for not that long. I'm like pretty new to it, but I started getting involved with that through Uncle Kev. Yeah, so that was my introduction to that about almost 2 years ago now.
So, just for the listeners, can you tell us a bit about the Australian Nuclear Free Alliance and the role that it plays in resisting nuclear projects across this continent?
I guess I can start with like a bit of history about ANFA. So it's been running for almost 30 years. I think 28 years ago is when it started, and it was around the time of like the Howard government and Jabiluka starting to kick off, which is uranium. Was like a uranium mine in Kakadu, on Mirarr country. And I guess in response to that, people kind of came together, I think in 1996, and they, were kind of speaking about, trying to respond to the proposal of Jabiluka, and kind of saw the necessity for, I guess, a group that was led by Aboriginal people. And it was like great, like Uncle Kevin Buzzacott was the founder of ANFA. At the time, it was like the Alliance Against Uranium was what it was called. And it kind of came out of like discussions with Uncle Kev, Yvonne Margarola, who's a senior traditional owner of Mirarr country and was massively involved in leading the campaign against Jabiluka, and also Jackie Katona, who was the CEO of Gunjamee Aboriginal Corporation, which is kind of like the Mirarr corporation. So those three, and then with support from like environmental greenies kind of thing, is how what was at the time the Alliance Against Uranium formed. And then they had their first meeting the next year in 1997, I think, in Alice Springs. And I guess the focus was like creating a space for people, like especially mob, to come together and be able to share stories and strategies and resources, and also get support. I guess like people, I've heard it referred to as like a black green alliance kind of thing. So I guess like getting support from a lot of these like greenies and environmental movements that often have like a lot more resources. And kind of trying to, for those two groups to work together. And then for, I guess, most of the time that ANFA existed, Uncle Kev was the president and Aunty Sue Hasseldine was the co-president. She's now the president. And so those two have been really heavily involved with it for a long time. And I guess some of the things that ANFA does is, like I said, like forming connections between like different affected First Nations, and I guess they create resources. Because it's an organization, I guess they're like able to like apply for grants and get money. Like it doesn't take any government funding either. And then just using whatever little money they can get to kind of support mob in their campaigns, I guess, in creating campaigns, trying different campaign methods like rallies, delegations, like to Canberra to talk to politicians, connecting them up with unions, public health groups, environmental groups, all that kind of thing. And I guess like the core part of it is this annual conference that has happened every year, except over COVID. But I think there was, like every year. And from what I've heard about it from people that have been attending for, a long time and been involved since the beginning, is that that's like really kind of the core. I don't know, like refilling of energy for a lot of people involved in anti-nuclear campaigning and like for mob and stuff as well.
Yeah, no, yeah, it sounds like it does play a pretty niche role in Australia in being able to do that and get those people together and link up people with the resources that they need and et cetera, et cetera. This year, I noticed it's being held up in, I'm not sure how to pronounce this. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Corn on, Nuku-Nuku country.
Yeah, corn, it is corn. I thought it might have been. But yeah, so how come they're having it up there this year?
So it's happened in Corn for like quite a few times actually. I guess it's a pretty simple thing about South Australia kind of being the belly of the beast a bit in terms of nuclear on this continent. Like, there's the world's biggest uranium mine is like not just a couple hours north of there. Like, there's been heaps of proposed waste dumps in South Australia. Like, a lot of the atomic bomb testing has happened there. But it has moved around. I think when there was quite a few dumps proposed in the NT, it was held up there. And last year, it was in Wollongong because of like the nuclear sub kind of thing. So that was the first time it was on the East Coast. But I think it's, yeah, mainly kind of a logistical thing. Like, the majority of people who attend ANFA, you know, mob from around South Australia because there's just been so many active and proposed projects.
Yeah, it really impacts them there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, moving on a little bit, how does ANFA work to actually, well, I suppose you've already kind of explained this a bit, but, you know, if you had anything else to add about how ANFA centres First Nations voices and leadership within that anti-nuclear movement.
Yeah, so I did go and, like, ask some people about this, actually, when I saw this question, because I was like, I would love to know, like, structurally, like, yeah, that I've been actually involved. Last year, I just attended as a volunteer. But yeah, I guess what I was told is that it's really been, like, yeah, which they say is a really good thing, that's quite embedded in the culture of ANFA since it was, like, you know, founded and, like, led by mob. That, yeah, the vibe is really, like, like, yeah, shut up and sit down if you're not and, yeah, that it's, like, really, it really is, like, about mob, like, speaking, you know, they are the ones that are there, like, at the conference, you know, to be speaking and sharing, like, that's the priority. And, you know, if you're not mob, you're there to, you know, it's, like, still obviously get involved and, like, listen and learn and all of that stuff, but it's, like,
there to support, not to lead.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's worked really well for ANFA. It's, like, one of the things that, you know, people I asked really appreciate, really actually appreciate about it, because it's so necessary, and I think there's, like, not enough spaces that are like
that. Yeah, yeah. No, there's,
like,
not.
Yeah, structurally as well, I think that they have a rule that it's, like, the committee has to be majority First Nations members, and, like, there's no decision-making without these, yeah, like, these Indigenous committee members being centered, and obviously, like, and affected communities, whatever community's talking about, like, being, yeah, being spoken about.
Yeah, yeah, no, it sounds really good. I suppose the next question I wanted to ask is if you could talk a bit more about some of the history of grassroots resistance to nuclear testing and mining and waste dumping across this continent.
Yeah, I guess I'll, like, maybe plug a resource here that's
yeah, yeah. And just for the listeners, we'll also share this resource in the description on the website, freecr.org.au/earthmatters.
Yeah, sweet. So there's, if you just type into Google the politics of nuclear waste disposal lessons from Australia, there's a paper that's, like, pretty short. I think it's maybe, like, 30 pages, written by Jim Green and Dimity Hawkins, who are both, who have both been involved in anti-nuclear organizing for a long time and are, like, I'm not sure if they're both still on the committee, but they definitely have been. but that has, like, a good summary of all of the, I'm not sure if it's, like, all of them or just, like, the successful campaigns, First Nations-led campaigns against nuclear proposals, like waste dumps and stuff. So it's kind of an easy read. It's, like, a couple of paragraphs per campaign.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And there's also, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of different ones. I guess, like, the Ranger and Jabiluka uranium mines are something that ANFA was involved in, like, helping form the campaign around. There's, yeah, a lot of info. Like, I'm not like you, Kieran. I can't, like, do it all off the top of my head. Yeah, but I think, like, yeah, there's on the Mirror, I think mirror.net, there's, like, heaps of information there about Ranger and Jabiluka, and they finally won that campaign. I think this year it was confirmed that there will be no uranium mining at Jabiluka. And so that's, like, a, you know, almost 30-year campaign. And, yeah, so, like, pretty crazy that that's been won. Yeah, again, that's, like, Yvonne Margarulo. And, yeah, I think it was, I met two, like, at ANFA last year, they sent two young men down from, yeah, the Mirar community to kind of chat, to attend the conference, because this was, before it was fully confirmed that no further mining would happen. And I guess they were kind of talking about that whole project and just one of their main reflections around this whole, like, uranium mine was that, it was just such a simple thing of them just being like, why are people just, like, not listening, like, all we're asking is to be listened to. Like, I don't know, I feel like a lot of, these things, like, come down to kind of, like, really simple.
I suppose building on that a bit, just from your experience last year, as well as the stuff that you're looking at, platforming at this year's conference, what are the sort of main nuclear threats that communities are facing today, like right now? Is it stuff like uranium mining? Is it nuclear waste proposals? Is it this push for nuclear submarines? Is it a bit of a combination of all of them or something else?
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, I guess a small win is with the election outcome. Like, the nuclear power thing isn't, like, as pressing of an issue now, but, like, obviously there's still AUKUS and everything that comes with that. Like, the nuclear subs, the nuclear waste dumps. There's also uranium mining. There is Olympic Dam, like Roxby Downs. Uranium mine is still running. There's a proposed Olympic Dam expansion which they're planning to expand that mine. I think there's also still the threat of a dump in WA, Mulga Rock. I think there's still no, like, maybe another small win is, and again, going back to like Jabiluka and like the work of all the Mirar mob and all the people that have supported them, is there's still no uranium mining in the NT. A lot of the discussions will probably be around AUKUS, and I expect this, the Olympic Dam expansion that's proposed. That was something that Uncle Kev was like fighting against for a long time, because the water that they use at that mine comes from like his country, Arabona country, and they're kind of sucking the Great Artesian Basin dry there. And heaps of sacred sites like the Mound Springs on Arabona country, are really under threat. They're all, drying up and, kind of tragic. And, with this expansion, they're going to need more water. So, I guess we'll see what happens. They're going to, there's the Northern Waters project as well, where they're planning to build a desalination plant. So I think that means that they might stop taking water from the Mound Springs and from the Great Artesian Basin. But if it's coming from the ocean, it's kind of, like, if they do that, it's kind of like, well, now they have unlimited water to, So it's like, I don't know, good in a way that these Mound Springs aren't getting sucked dry anymore, but also it's not like, is that really, I don't know.
And then they've got, the problem of what they do with like all the salt and stuff. Like, they had that desalination plant down in Adelaide, and I think as a result, like, the ocean there was getting all saltier and impacting the wildlife and whatnot.
I think it was like proposed a couple of years ago, and it got knocked back because the community there were like, didn't want it. And I think there was like, like the cuttlefish breeding grounds. But they're going for it again. So I don't know, I guess I'm not sure where at the moment.
And I suppose it just really highlights as well how like, this nuclear stuff is really connected to a lot of broader struggles as well around stuff like land rights and sacred sites and sovereignty and, the climate and ecosystems and stuff like that. It's very all interconnected. It's a, much broader struggle than just being anti-nuclear, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was one thing that I remember Uncle Kev talking about a lot, was stories that he would tell around, because he did like a lot of solidarity stuff, and like he did the walk and stuff, and he like went over to Japan because the, uranium and that, I can't remember the name of it now, in Japan when they had like the nuclear reactor meltdown. I'm just blanking on the name. And it was,
I know what the one you're talking about though, I remember that was a couple of years ago.
Uranium like in there came from this mine that he was fighting against and kind of talking about, not only is it like destroying all of these sites and like the environment, all this stuff, but being like, it's so devastating that, the stuff from his country is being damaging, and being used in other countries to also cause destruction over there, and like this kind of sense of responsibility to be engaging in solidarity work because of that.
Fukushima, that was it.
That's it.
it is really like interconnected, and that's another big point as well. Like, apologies, I'm about to go on a bit of a tangent here. It's not something that was originally in the questions, but like you brought it up, and at the end of the day, we got to remember that Something like one third of the world's accessible uranium is right here in so-called Australia. So, when we are looking at these nuclear disasters across the world, like there's every chance that, that uranium, could have come from here, from our very own backyards. And yeah, it's causing all kinds of destruction right across the world as a result. And it's, something that, as mob, we feel a bit of responsibility for as well, because that's come from our country and we have the responsibility for that and how that impacts the rest of the world. Yeah. I guess, getting back to the questions a bit though, I have noticed as well that on the flyer, you're getting delegates that are coming from affected country and that you've, got travel support there for, a lot of the mob that are coming from affected country and stuff like that. I just wanted to, plug that and, really highlight how important that is as well. More of a statement than a question, I suppose, but, it's really great to see that Amphi's doing that sort of stuff. As a bit of a question and a bit of a lead on for that, the listeners at home who, might not be able to make it but still want to show solidarity and support, how can people who aren't directly affected still, get involved or, still help the campaign and show that solidarity and support?
I guess, I mean, I would say the biggest way is like donating money, which there's a website for ANFA. There's like also a lot of information there. It's just anfa.org.au. But yeah, like I said, like ANFA doesn't take any government funding. And so a lot of the money is, yeah, like donations and grants and almost, yeah, the majority of that money goes to helping bring mob over for the conference. And like, I guess it's the policy that if people who aren't mob who are attending like do pay, and like that money as well goes towards helping cover the costs for mob coming. Obviously there's a lot of people coming from pretty remote areas, and
Yeah.
just the cost of fuel is so high, and
Yeah.
a lot of these, yeah, people do not have hundreds and hundreds of dollars, and spending money to come and chat about, even
Yeah.
though it's like really important stuff, it's like not. It's actually just not realistic, yeah, for a lot of people to be coming, especially when you have people coming from really far, like interstate,
And from
bringing
places where there's,
other.
not capital cities nearby with like airports and whatever else, and it's not like they're just flying from Melbourne to Sydney sort of thing. It's they might have to drive 24 hours or more.
Yeah, like, yeah, really large distances being covered. And I mean, yeah, like we know that the fuel out there is not cheap. Yeah, so I think like money donating is probably most like material way to support and anything. Yeah, if it's not spent on the conference, it's yeah spent on some of the other things I was mentioning before, like resources, transport, for community members to be going to Canberra to talk to politicians or kind of whatever they need, like costs around campaigning.
Yeah, all these things cost money at the end of the day. Your travel, your accommodation, being able to have the resources to, distribute information and campaign and stuff like that. A lot of dollars go into it that people don't necessarily see, and don't realize. And it's, yeah, it can be pretty expensive. So, yeah, definitely do donate if you are in the position to do that. What was that website again? Sorry.
Just anfa.org.au.
Yeah, so head to the website and donate if you can. So, going back to like the conference that's coming up at the end of the month, I suppose what do you hope that people will take away from this year's gathering? What are you hoping that people will get out of it or, will be accomplished from the conference?
I guess part of what it says on the flyer as well is that, yeah, a lot of the focus is on, I don't want to call it networking, so like, it doesn't feel like, I don't know. It feels like it's a bit beyond that. But just, yeah, like space for community to, yeah, I think it's like kind of a rare opportunity for people from so many different mobs to be coming together around the same issue interstate. I guess like around, yeah, this organization that's been going consistently for like almost 30 years. And so there is relationships built up
Yeah.
there, and there is, kind of history and actual, yeah, experience and lessons to be shared. Yeah, and just I think that's like the biggest part of it is, I mean, yeah, when I spoke to people on the committee and stuff, there's a lot of like fond memories and feelings associated with the meetings, which seems really nice. Like it's a time for everyone to
Yeah.
come to see everyone for a long time. Sometimes it can be, people who are fighting against these things maybe aren't necessarily getting a lot of support from like the rest of their community. Sometimes like that's
Yeah.
it is, so it's I think in that way, it's like really good for people to feel supported in these issues that are really,
Yeah.
yeah,
And,
like,
you know, it's not something to be underestimated either, because it can be hard if you're just out there by yourself fighting against something. But, you know, to know that there's other people who are supporting you and standing with you and going through the same things and, you know, to be able to share those experiences and those resources, you know, it is a very crucial thing. It's a very important thing to happen. And, you know, I don't think people really, really, you know, appreciate how important that is to be able to get those people together and have that united front as well. Because, you know, so much of this stuff is the colonial government and all these corporations and stuff, they rely on stuff like the divide and conquer tactics. But, you know, being able to get all the mob together in one room at one table, it goes such a long way to being able to combat those divide and conquer tactics and to have that united front against nuclear, you know, nuclear mines and waste and whatever else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think like the kind of summary of it is just that it's like really an opportunity to recharge the battery kind of thing for a lot of people. And yeah, like I feel like the relational side of it is often very underestimated by a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just for those who are listening who might want to attend, you know, what should they expect from the gathering, I suppose? And, you know, how could they go about potentially attending? If not this year, maybe next year.
I guess they could like contact, make contact via the website that we mentioned before. I think people who are not mob that want to attend, I guess like maybe if they're involved with anti-nuclear campaigning, they might, yeah, they could reach out. But yeah, I guess like the focus of the conference is for mob. And there's plenty of, yeah, I don't know. There's obviously a lot of other just like environmental kind of anti-nuclear platforms that aren't centered on mob that they could go to.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, I'm not saying like don't come, but like kind of like invite, you know, you get invited. And there is a lot of like, yeah, a lot of it is like word of mouth between, you know, kind of community members that ANFA knows of and has contact with and like established relationships with. There are people that come along as volunteers who aren't mob, which we don't have space for any more volunteers this year. But if, yeah, in the future, I think I would say like reach out, or maybe get involved in anti-nuclear organizing, and people that know you will be like, hey, you're a really good onto this thing.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess for the what to expect thing a little bit, I think like AUKUS will be a big focus, and something that I've heard spoken about is, yeah, wanting to put more focus on free, prior and informed consent. I guess, yeah, also relating to AUKUS, because that's kind of gives the government kind of unilateral power to do whatever, which I guess they kind of already have. But yeah, they don't need to consult with, I guess, anyone over these waste dumps and whatever, like much less traditional owners. But yeah, I think more focus is going to be put on, yeah, free, prior and informed consent, which comes from the United Nations Declaration, was it, on the rights of Indigenous people?
Yeah, and something I was discussing in my show earlier in the week on the Yiluman, actually, free, prior and informed consent. But yeah, you know, it's something that the government does, you know, completely ignore for the most part, when it comes to mob and when it comes to ripping up our resources and, you know, destroying our land and sacred sites and whatever else. Yeah, it's something that isn't spoken about enough, and there's not enough pressure on the government to uphold those rights to free, prior and informed consent, which, you know, are a part of international law because of UNDRIP. So yeah, it's something good to hear is being discussed, and, you know, I suppose, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, not just discussed, but strategized around.
Yeah, I think from, yeah, what I've been told, the plan is to, yeah, kind of like looking forward to be talking about that, yeah, a lot more, because, yeah, like you're saying, it's like international law. And but yeah, I guess that doesn't also really matter here. Like, I feel like that's something that, yeah, you and Uncle Robbie and stuff talk about all the time. Like, ignoring this is a really important thing that's agreed. But yeah.
Alrighty, I suppose, you know, is there thanks for coming on the show. Is there anything else you wanted to add, or anything else you wanted to plug or to mention or bring up?
I think, I guess one of the things that I asked was, like, to people that have been involved for a while, was around, yeah, I guess, like, the main lessons and stuff. And I kind of liked the answer, which was just persistence, around these issues. And yeah, I think, yeah, doing this for over 28 years, and a lot of it, yeah, the responses were kind of around really having to do, like, make do with what very little resources are there. And, like, I think, yeah, people reflected on how that really makes you have to be a lot cleverer and a lot more strategic around
Yeah,
the,
definitely.
yeah. And yeah, there's definitely been, like, quite a few wins out of that. But yeah, I think, like, that's a good lesson to end on. Just be
Yeah.
persistent.
Yeah, exactly. And like as you mentioned before, that other campaign, it's been going for 30 years and they've finally got it over the line. So, without that persistence, you'd need, a lot of persistence to push for something for 30 years, but they got there in the end, and it's amazing that they did.
Yeah, for sure. And I think even that's something, yeah, I'm just thinking of Uncle Kev now, and before he passed, and he was kind of, I don't know, it was like really bittersweet in this way of him being like, I know, you know, we're gonna win in the end, and I know, you know, that I'm not gonna be around to see it, but, like, I'm still so excited. And, like,
Yeah.
yeah, I never really understood with, I guess, like, people like that, and Aunty Sue and Uncle Robbie, like, these elders that have been doing this for, like, so long. I'm just, like, so always so, like, humbled and amazed by, yeah, I guess, like, their persistence and how, yeah, I'm like, how have you not given up? But I guess you can't. But yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah, that's a good note to end it on, I suppose.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on the show. And yeah, I'll plug all those things in the description on the 3CR website.
Cool. Thanks heaps, Garen.
No worries. Have a good one. Hope it all goes well.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah. You've been listening to Earth Matters. Quick shout out to the Community Broadcasting Foundation, as well as to 3CR down in Nam, where this show is produced. I'll be back in a couple of weeks. Until then, have a good one. Thank you.